You're listening to the Youth Crick Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at WUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at WUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
I can show you around.
That'd be great. Thank you. So what do you do around here?
Read books, transcribe music, swim at the river, go out at night.
Sounds fun. All right, later.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Matt St. Clair.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. And today we are going to be talking about Call Me By Your Name and I, Tonya. Two of some of the really good movies of this year, or last year, I guess. As some of you may know, we're still at the Youth Critic and KHZ Network. We're trying to catch up on reviewing some more of 2017's latest movies, especially stuff that just came to Atlanta recently. So we're going to continue on until about another week, and then we'll finally get into the Paddington 2s, the Insidious 4s, that we're going to get into the 2018 movies next week. But for now, it's just Matt and I reviewing the Call Me By Your Name and I, Tonya. So starting things off, Matt, what did you think of Call Me By Your Name?
Oh, well, anyone who follows me closely on Twitter knows how much I've been anticipating it, and also how much I absolutely loved it. I've been pretty concrete about how much I love this film on either on a blog post or on my Twitter feed, but it's still the best film I've seen from last year, and I'm still playing catch up, seeing things like The Post and Darkest Hour and all the, and even Yeah, I'm about to see. I'm going to be seeing Phantom Thread pretty soon. So even the films I've seen from last year after Call Me By Your Name, if I've seen them this year, they still haven't topped it.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to text me when you see Phantom Thread, because I want to know your thoughts. But for now, I was anticipating Call Me By Your Name since I heard about it from Sundance almost a year ago. And I finally got to see the movie 3 weeks ago after Christmas, and because it just took forever to come here in Atlanta, where I live, or where I go and see the smaller award contenders. And yeah, I think it's excellent. It's an excellently well-made movie. I wouldn't say it's my best movie of the year, but it is, or my favorite movie of the year. Excellent tour de force of a romance film for me, of a romance drama.
But to me, it's just absolute perfection. It's perfect right down to the dance sequence in the first act of the film. Even the opening line of the song Love My Way starts playing is, there's an army on the dance floor.
And even the song choices here are fantastic. I mean, I might be butchering this name, but I think it's Stefan Stevens who does a lot of the songs in the movie.
I think it's Sufjan Stevens.
Okay.
But I could be wrong.
It's fine. I will probably end up butchering a couple of names on this show anyway. Mm. But yeah, this is fantastic. I thought the mood and the chemistry of the actors were fantastic. I thought it was a very well-made movie, and in the end, I was feeling for Elio in, not in his kind of like loss. I mean, not in a not in a like deathly loss, but in what he loses in, you know, Oliver at the end of this relationship or the end of this kind of affair.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah, it left me pretty. Yep, the day after I saw it and thought of how their relationship ended, I was last time really, why? I wanted their summer to last forever.
Yeah, and you want it to, but it's a movie about where the enemy is time. It's like that's the only enemy. I mean, is in a film where, you know, in most movies, romances are, you know, there's always some, you know, enemy, either rather that be a physical or a societal thing. And this is just time. It's just the time of, you know, that they have together. They only have 6 weeks together and they only realize of their love, Elio and Oliver. They only realize that they're really meant for each other like halfway through the whole experience, halfway through his summer retreat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What other thoughts did you have, Matt, on the movie? I've been kind of blabbing.
Well, that's okay. Well, there's Michael Stuhlbarg.
Oh yeah, perfect.
That monologue. That is what had the what nearly had the man tears streaming down my face.
I guess we can go a little bit into spoilers, but the movie ends on this kind of 1-2 punch of not only Stuhlbarg's monologue, but also it ends, you know, in winter with Elio and his family getting a call from Oliver and Oliver saying he's engaged.
Yeah.
And you just feel for Elio as he's sitting.
Yeah, staring at the fireplace.
Mm-hmm. You know, kind of mourning his loss.
Yep. I feel like in that.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I feel like in that final shot, he's both mourning his loss, yet also with that sly smile, you could tell that he still cherishes those fond memories that he had with Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when Timothy Chalamet will likely get Oscar nominated, I feel like that's going to be his Oscar clip for sure.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, just that little clip of him. I mean, it's a little spoilery-ish for people that haven't seen it, but still, it's like it just showcases his acting in that, you know, final shot of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I would like to see, you know, the Michael Stuhlbarg clip, but then again, you would only do that if Michael Stuhlbarg got nominated, but.
Which is going to be tricky because as great as he is in that one scene, for the most part, it's a background character.
It is. I mean, he's a minor character, and him and his wife are minor characters in this piece. They're just kind of like, they're kind of mild instigators because they brought Oliver along on their summer retreat.
Yeah.
So, it's tricky. It would be, but it's still like, I mean, Michael Stuhlbarg giving a really good performance. So,
and yeah, he's also been in practically everything this year.
He's been
The Post and Shape of Water, Fargo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's climbing up. I mean, he's staying in there.
Yeah. But I think if any, because I think only one supporting actor is going to get nominated, I think Between him and Armie Hammer, it's probably going to be Armie Hammer. Which will be fine with me. It's the best work that he's... To me, that's the best work he's done so far.
Yeah, I agree. Because he's, you know, he's dealing with a complicated he's dealing with complicated emotions inside himself, too, because he is attracted. He doesn't want to, you know,
cross any boundaries.
Yeah, he doesn't want to cross boundaries or, you know, or Ilio. So
yeah, that's why during the scene where Ilio meets Oliver after Ilio's first time, you could tell when you see a look at Oliver's face, you're like you could tell that he's thrilled about how they consummated their relationship, but still conflicted over whether or not, still feeling conflicted about it because he doesn't want Ilio to feel any regret about that, right?
Right. You know, not only did not have any regret, but, you know, feel he was forced into it or feel right. Like he was pressured or, you know, pressures that you would if you were in a recessive position that assume that Ilio was in. So I wanted to talk a little bit, so I think we have to talk about, you know, the director of this movie. I think
of course. So Luca Guadagnino, I feel like it's weird that he's not getting buzz about as much because he's the one that crafted this whole masterpiece. And one of the reasons that the chemistry between the two actors is so rich is because of the way that Luca directs them both.
Yeah. Well, he's basically forcing the camera to just kind of be like a point of view rather than be a character. Like, you're just following these characters in their relationship. Like, he's just kind of allowing the situation to progress rather than work around, you know, quick editing cuts and flashy directing. He's just trying to let the story kind of progress as its own. He's just filming the story as it's told.
He even lets the cinematography do most of the storytelling. Because one thing that is often brought up is the significance of words and how Ilio and Oliver don't use words to express their relationship, but the relationship that they develop is demonstrated through the camera, like the way that Oliver places his hand on Elio's shoulder, the way that they hold hands while one of them holds a cigarette.
Through the actions. It's incredible use of visual imagery and also it's impeccable to the screenplay as well, because now, you know, because the actors are, they're talking, but they're not like, it's about their relationship.
Right.
You know, the dialogue is subtly like bringing them closer, but in a natural way.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. I really enjoyed, I really like this movie a lot. And the more I talk about it, especially with people who have seen it, I thoroughly think about it more, because when I walked out of it, I really liked it, but then I had to rush and see Molly's Game.
Not a bad follow-up film, that's for sure.
It's not a bad follow-up, but I had to rush in there, so I didn't have much time to process it until like later in my day. But the more I think about it, the more I talk about it, it's really good. I highly recommend this movie. But before we before we move on, what do you think about the Oscar chances for this movie? Because I think you're the one that runs award podcasts, right?
I run the Film Scoop podcast, which isn't strict. It doesn't strictly cover awards, but I do follow the awards race pretty closely.
Okay.
So, well, Best Picture is Best Picture. It's most likely going to get in. And Best Actor for Timothée Chalamet, adapted screenplay. It's definitely going to get in. Either Armie Hammer or Michael Stuhlbarg gets in best supporting actor. May Luca Guadagnino, if there's enough passion votes, he could get in best director. Hopefully cinematography and original song for the two songs by Sufjan Stevens, but we'll see.
Going to the technical award really quickly to cinematography, it's always tough to be like, what could be the top five? Like, what could be the five cinematography awards that go in? Because there's always more than like 10 great movies that have great cinematography. And of course, this has great cinematography as well. So it's like, I hope this gets in. But then again, there are like 10 other movies that are like, that yeah, look just as impressive. Mm-hmm. But definitely like the top, I would think, you know, it would cover all the top categories. I mean, I would hate it for Luca Guadagnino, but it seems like there are five other people that probably will have other chances than Luca. So it, you know, I hope he gets in, but I think he'll do it. But if not, it's a co-producer on. Did you hear the last thing I said?
No, I missed that one.
Okay. Well, Luca Guadagnino is still a producer, so he'll still get, if he gets a Best Picture nomination, he'll still get nominated and he'll still be in the game, but it would be kind of sad if he didn't get Best Director or Best Director nom for the Call Me By Your Name.
Oh, it would be nice. I would love it if he got in. I'm not predicting him to get in just because I want to be as realistic as possible, but I'm optimistic.
Yeah, I'm optimistic. But it's definitely a we'll see on that one. So
yeah.
Matt, are you ready to move on to, do you have any more final thoughts on Call Me By Your Name?
Any final thoughts? It's perfection. What can I say? And I would say to the listeners of this podcast, make the effort to see it at the nearest theater, at the closest theater that's playing it. Because a film like this deserves to be seen.
I highly recommend it as well. And for the list, for you listeners, Call Me By Your Name is going to have another nationwide expansion this weekend. So please check it out. It's at this point, it should be everywhere, but I think this weekend it's going to be pretty much out there. So please check it out. Matt and I both highly recommend this movie. And with that, I think we're ready for Itania.
Yeah.
The haters always say, Tanya, tell the truth. Tanya, Tanya. There's no such thing as truth. Everyone has their own truth.
Well, I like Itania, so what do you think?
Good question. See, when I first, after I saw it, I didn't hate it, but I still didn't like it. Even I still don't like it that much, because here's the thing is, I felt like I had problems with how they took one of the most serious, dramatic media stories of the 1990s and made it seem like such a comedic farce. And also, it's I found it's you don't know the whole story, I thought some of its editing choices.
I was not allowed during the whole story.
Oh. I thought some of its editing choices, like the actors breaking the fourth wall, got irritating very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, one of my biggest concerns with the my biggest initial concern was how the film tries very hard to make Tonya Harding sympathetic. Because, I mean, yeah, it does show how she was a victim of abuse at the hands of her mother and her father. But at the same time, her husband. But at the same time, she did play a part in her own downfall.
Yeah. And
the film says makes it clear that even if she wasn't aware of the bashing of Nancy's knee, she was aware of a plan to sabotage Nancy.
Yeah. And that's kind of the kicker of it, because it's still like, I think the movie tries to have it both ways, is that it tries to be like, you know, this is what happened. This is the story that, you know, we can kind of, you know, piece together. You know, it's hard to be kind of hard to be, you know, objective, because everyone has their own kind of version of the story, but this is like the best version we can kind of be like, it kind of sort of fits, kind of exactly. Sort of works. And even the characters themselves are very much like they, you know, their stories are kind of different, or they have different point of views of what happened. So it's kind of hard to have an objective viewpoint, because the only thing we know that really happened is, well, is Nancy Kerrigan got her knees bashed in, and it nearly ended her, you know, skating career and Tonya Harding's career suffered for it. Because she had involvement. Her husband had involvement. Like, we just only know what the FBI can conclude.
Yep. All we know is that Nancy had her knee bashed. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much all we know.
And that's all the film can be subjective of.
Yeah, and admittedly, as I began to think more, and as I thought more and more about the film after I saw it, I realized that the film's main objective is simply to tell us Tonya Harding's story and let us decide whether we really were too harsh on her, or whether she rightly suffered the repercussions of her downfall, or of her. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Paid the price for her involvement while she was being unfair to herself with her involvement in the scandal. At the same time, the film does show how everyone around her was unfair to her. Even the judges were unfair to her, because even if she was the best figure skater and was even the first figure skater, the first American skater to complete the triple axel, mostly giving her low scores because they hated her as a person, because they didn't like how she was against the whole cookie cutter, clean, wholesome figure skater image that they kept trying to promote, because she always liked to design her own dresses and skate to ZZ Top, smoke cigarettes. She was everything that Nancy Kerrigan wasn't. But even though Tonya Harding was the better skater, she the difference, another difference between Tanya and Nancy is how is not only how aggressive how Tanya Harding just had her work ethic, but even when even if Nancy Kerrigan had her skating career taken away from her, she still had her privilege. But all Tanya Harding had was her skating.
Yeah.
That's one possible reason that we could side more with Tanya on this whole thing. Sorry, it seemed like I was rambling.
No, you're good. The character Tanya Harding in the story, the thing with her is that she, or the way that the movie portrays her as, is be Nancy Kerrigan. She wasn't brought up that way. She had essentially the, what I call the David O. Russell dysfunctional family. Mm-hmm. And where everyone is screaming and yelling at each other and then, or abusing each other, you know, and it kind of created this, you know, attitude about her that, you know, that was like, I must have it now. I have to be on top of everything. I must be the best. I must be myself, and I must be the best skater, because ultimately I cannot sell my image. I cannot sell that I am essentially a pageant queen. I can't, you know, I'm not some model that's going to walk down and look pretty. I'm going to skate the best of my ability. And that's the Tanya in this movie. And you do feel sympathy for her, because from a broken home, and she did everything right until the moment where she came up to one of the judges in their car and was like, what do I have to do to essentially get a high score, to get in the game? And he ultimately says, be
more wholesome. We need someone that represents a wholesome American family. And she's like, I don't have a wholesome American family.
And he's like, yeah, too bad.
Well, if I were her, I would feel very saddened by that, because this is, I mean, yeah, Tanya Harding is, she may not be a typical princess skater, but that's not the world she grew up in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she didn't, as I said, she's not, one way in which she wasn't Nancy Kerrigan is that she didn't come from a place of privilege like she did. All Tanya Harding had was her skating. Mm-hmm. And she may not have been the most likable personality, but she was the best skater. And while I do think she, well, it is understandable that she faced consequences for what happened to Nancy, at the same time, she still, so we can understand why she was pissed, why she got frustrated at the world.
Yeah, and
because the world just kept finding ways to kick her down.
Yeah, and that car scene, or the parking garage scene, the pivotal like statement of the movie. Like, you know, I mean, yes, there's a couple more like morals and themes that are going to happen in the next, you know, other half of the movie. But for me, that's the defining statement of Tanya, is that, you know, that in the sports industry, it doesn't matter how fantastic you are. You can be Muhammad Ali of, you know, skating rings. But if you do not have, you know, the self-image, and if you do not have the, you know, if you cannot be marketable, then you're useless. And because in the end, she asks, like, why can't it never just be about the skating? And he's like, well, we got to sell you. We have to, you know, it's, there's more. And I think that's kind of the defining statement of the movie, is that, oh, you know, it's not just about, you know, what she has to do she has to fit into a cycle. She has to fit into a stereotype in order to get in. She has to fit in with what society wants out of her in order to get what continue to doing what she wants. And that's where the cycle of abuse continues, because she was never going to have, you know, a relationship with her mother. And the only other thing she had going for was her husband, Jim.
Jeff.
Need to keep up Wikipedia on me. Her husband Jeff, and that was it. So, and she gets him back in the cycle of abuse, even though he was more abusive and, you know, had a part in, you know, the whole Nancy Kerrigan thing. So it's like, no matter what she did, the movie's idea is, no matter what she would have done, she would have never made it. And if she did, she was damned if she don't. And that's the idea, and that's kind of why I like the movie, but the thing is, I don't really love it because there's nothing really special after that message. There's, you know, you just get to see a reenactment of the Nancy Kerrigan thing. Mm. And then and then the rest is, you can pretty much figure out how it's going to go.
Yeah. And also, so, I think one major flaw that the film has is that it doesn't give us much of Nancy Kerrigan. Other than the incident, and where she's like, why?
We barely see her face.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know the film is called I, Tanya, but I think if they had shown us more of Nancy Kerrigan, it would have perfectly demonstrated how she was such a foil to Tanya.
There's a whole scene in the movie where Tanya explains that they were friends, and it's like, why don't we have more of that? You know, she don't have to be a major, have to be a massive character, but we need, you know, but we need something to work with. We need something more to work with. We need a little bit more as to like why Tanya believed in, or Tanya, how Tanya and Jeff came to the conclusion that Nancy may be sending death threats. Because I feel like that was kind of like, wait, you just said you were her friend. You're thinking, but, you know, 30 minutes into the movie later, you're like, well, she must be sending me death threats, or they're coming to this conclusion or whatnot. So I you're just like, well, wait a minute. So we have this mixed image or this mixed idea of what Nancy is based off of what Tanya is telling us. So kind of hard to, you know, it's kind of hard to get a read of what we were supposed to get out of Nancy, other than, you know, look at this privileged white girl. Hmm. He could fall on her. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And that's, so yeah, I think, yeah, you're right. I think it's having not Nancy be a little bit more pivotal is a kind of an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. As for the acting, I thought that was quite terrific. Margot, even if I thought the film was uneven, I thought Margot Robbie still gave a very committed live wire performance.
It is. It is a very committed performance. It is. I mean, has there ever been a performance where she hasn't given her 100% yet after Wolf of Wall Street?
Not that I could think of.
Yeah, because even a terrible movie like Suicide Squad, she's still giving a committed performance. She's still committing to her role.
Oh, she's easily one of the best things about it.
Yeah. So, and I just love how she's just building her brand. It's like, I'm going to, you know, take on these, you know, strong or these kind of, you know, female icon roles to kind of build the image of, you know, of women up, you know, have a stronger voice for women in film. And yeah, but anyway, but yeah, I really liked her performance, and I even liked Allison Janney. I really thought she did.
Yeah. I thought she was kind of one note, but But oh, still.
Yeah.
No, honestly, as I said before on my podcast, I actually thought Julianne Nicholson gave the better supporting performance. Because I thought she was more nuanced as Tanya's lifelong trainer, Diane. Bringing in elements of sly humor and grace.
Don't get in much of her either.
Right.
We don't get, and that's kind of the sad part. We don't get much of her, even though she's really good. Like, she has the right amount of humor. She's there for Tanya in her worst moments, but she's not that big of a pivotal in the movie. So, but yeah. What do you think of Sebastian Stan or Bucky Barnes?
I really liked him. I think it's the best work that he's ever done. And even though I think he's super sexy, I felt very ashamed to be so attracted to him in this film, because he plays such an abusive piece of crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he did an amazing job at playing such a piece of crap.
He did. And he, he plays into that, that kind of toxic masculinity slash also, like, he, is a little threatened by Tanya's assertiveness. And Tanya's, like, just will. Strong will. And he's definitely, afraid of it. And it's, and Sebastian plays it well, because he goes from the, angry, abusive to, and to, he acts almost like a small, like a man child.
Yeah.
Apologetic man child. It's weird and creepy and eerie, but it's great. But it's a great performance, even though you're feeling swarmy while you're watching it.
Yeah.
But I think we have to talk about the Oscar chances of this movie, because I don't think it's as great as Call Me by Your Name.
Oh, definitely not. I think as for Oscar chances, well, Margot Robbie and Allison Janney, definitely. I think Allison Janney is out in front to win Best Supporting Actress, which makes me sad for Laurie Metcalf and Lady Bird.
I agree. Lady Metcalf gave the better performance.
And maybe original screenplay and probably editing, just because it's so flashy. And picture, I think it's Evan is a number 9 or 10. But I think that's just the acting, and then maybe picture editing and screenplay and maybe makeup if it made the shortlist. It might have. I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I don't think it'll make as big of a splash as everyone thought it did at Toronto.
Mm-hmm. The humor is very rough. So I don't know how well voters are gonna respond to its rough brand of humor, especially even the scenes of domestic abuse that are, to me, are very quite poorly handled.
Well, they lack momentum or a sense of.
Well, I just think
they
just
lack don't the think... punch. They lack the punch that they're trying to hit.
I just don't think there's any need to make scenes like those colorful. because they involve, you know, montage of retro music and even Tanya breaking the fourth wall as her face is getting bashed into a mirror. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's pretty.
Even if it wasn't the intention, even if its intention wasn't to be humorous, still, you. That just made me. That just left a.
It's not in good taste. Not in good taste, but there's a part of, but you know, but here's the kind of, you know, paradox is to feel, is it meant to be in bad taste so you feel something, or is it just in bad taste because it's a bad taste? Like, that's kind of the paradox I'm like, well, if, you know, it's meant to be in bad taste, but, you know, how far is it in bad taste? You know, that's, I don't know. I have those questions popping in my head all the time. And I never have the answer to them. I never have an answer to them, right or wrong.
Yeah, one question I have for you is, which one did you like more, this or Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri? Because one thing I've noticed is how there are people that like Three Billboards but hate I, Tanya, and vice versa. So I'm curious as to what your thoughts are.
I'm in the middle, if you can believe it. Like, I kind of like them both the same. Like, they both have, you know, they both have issues of how they handle their subject matter. Like, you know, like, Three Billboards is, in its own way, it is a, you know, it is a feminist picture about a woman who has had enough and is going to do everything she can to, you know, get to light a fire up everyone's ass until they find, you know, the person who killed her daughter. And it's a great movie in that context, but in the same have Sam Rockwell being a horrible son of a bitch. I mean, just a horrible person. And in the end, he has like a very quick redemptive arc. And then the two of them and then Rockwell and McDormand both, you know, get in the car together in a way that it's not 100% believable. Right. And then, I, Tanya is a story about, you know, the struggle of, you know, being stuck in the cycle of abuse because society wants you to be with, you know, demands you to be with your husband, even if abusive or not, depending on what the story is, and, you know, and it's about, like, you know, the problematic of, you know, of that cycle, the problematic of, you know, of trying to market a, you know, wholesome ideal when it doesn't exist. And that's what I, Tanya is. So, but as we were discussing, it's still doesn't reach that, the potential of that idea. So to answer your question, Matt, it's both, but they're both flawed movies, and I don't think either of them deserve to win Best Picture. I think there are other movies that came out this year that are more deserving.
I would agree with you there. I mean, I think I, Tanya's flawed. I think Three Billboards is very flawed. But I feel like I like this one a bit more.
Yeah.
It feels like it had something more to say. And, I mean, Three Billboards talk about important subject matter, but it does so in a more tone-deaf manner.
Mm-hmm. Not only a tone deaf, but in a very outsider, like, well, not necessarily outsider, but just like you're only getting, you know, a point of view that's not completely, that doesn't really work. That doesn't really, that's into all the problems.
And I know that, my thoughts on how it depicts the story of Tonya Harding may seem a bit unclear, because at first I said, that the film tries very hard to make Tonya Harding sympathetic, and now I'm like, maybe we were too harsh on her now that we know what her story was like. Even if she rightly suffered consequences for her actions.
Well, I mean, like I said, she was down, like, that car scene is so pivotal because it's a statement in saying, it's a perfect statement of saying she was, you know, always going to be damned no matter what.
So. Because she wasn't as privileged as her fellow skaters, so she's only going by what she knows.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's only going by, you know, she's only going by not only what she knows, but she's going by with what she has at her disposal. Because everyone else, you know, has, you know, $5,000 dresses, or they have, or, you know, outfits to skate in. Everyone has, you know, brings, you know, like classical, you know, music to, you know, to skate to. Whereas she wanted to break barriers. She wanted to do her own thing, and no one just kept pushing her out because she was trying to do too many new things.
After I record this podcast, I might not still have a concrete answer as to how I feel, but even if I still think it's a flawed film, it's still not a terrible film. And I do admire how it tries very hard to be an unconventional biopic, even if it does end up being misguided at times. But it's still salvaged by the great performances. The great performance by Margot Robbie.
It is, and it's. I mean, that's the thing I will always praise about I, Tonya, is Margot Robbie just giving her 100% to the role. Like, she is a committed actress, and that's what I'll always, you know, take away, is that she really gave her best to represent Harding in the best in possibly could.
Yeah.
And maybe if they would have had a different director, like I did mention earlier, David O. Russell, maybe even the Coens, you know, that can deal with this kind of humor. Maybe it would have been a little. I've been hearing the Coens. And I thought about it, and I was like, you know, maybe this could work, because there's, you know, wacky characters, and the story is pretty, you know, it's pretty much, I mean, when you think about it, it's this crazy, you know, small, it's this crazy story that can feel like a small town story that, you know, that feels like, you know, kind of world breaking. I don't know if it was, I would just say, you know, maybe Greg Gillespie wasn't the right choice, but everyone involved in I, Tonya did the best they could. That's my best statement I can say. Everyone did the best they could. Serves too many Oscar praises, but I think it's a fine, solid movie. And if Tonya Harding deserved it or not, I think it was wrong for her to, you know, still have, you know, little involvement in sabotaging Nancy. I still think it's wrong, but I think she was always damned if she did. If no matter what she did, she was damned. That's my opinion. Yeah. That's my opinion.
Oh, all right.
So, so do you have any more thoughts on I, Tonya?
I think I've said all. I think that's it. That's all I got.
Yeah. All right. So, where can the good people find you?
They can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at FilmGuy619. And they can also listen to the Film Scoop podcast on SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio.
All right, cool. I will put the links to your podcast below, in the description of the podcast. So Matt, thank you for coming on the show and talking about these two movies with me. But for me on Twitter, you can find me at MovieKale, and you can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic, and then you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHC Network. Thank you all for listening. Matt, thank you for coming on for your first time, and we hope
Thanks
to
for having me.
Future. It was great talking
to
you.
Come back on again.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on. And as far as next week is concerned, Youth Critic listeners, we're just, I think we're going to finally do our best of 2017 and also do a most anticipated of 2018 in that same podcast. Matt, before we go, very quickly, just a curveball question. What's your most anticipated movie of 2018?
For me, my most anticipated film of 2018 is Widows, a heist thriller directed by Steve McQueen, and which stars Academy Award winner Viola Davis, Cynthia Erivo, Elizabeth Debicki, Michelle Rodriguez, Colin Farrell, Robert Duvall, Liam Neeson, Jackie Weaver, Carrie Coon, Daniel Kaluuya, Andre Holland. Holy crap. And it's written by Gillian Flynn, who did Gone Girl. So there you go.
Wow. Okay. I need to look up this movie. I haven't heard of this movie. I need to look it up because that all sounds like a perfect package to me. But thanks. But yeah, that's it. Thanks, Matt. And we will see everyone next time.
What a line.
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Okay.
Action.
What is line?